This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we have another extract from the Judges Open meeting taken from the 2014 ADQUAN USDF annual meeting. But before that, FEI Judge Janet Foy explains collective marks. Welcome to the program, Janet.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to speaking to everyone.
Well, we want to talk about collective marks this week and how they, of course, affect the total score. But if you could give us an overview to start off with and remind everyone what those comprise of.
Well, the collected marks are a bit like a summary or a review of the test. And as a judge, I like to be able to put the highest and the lowest mark in the collective marks that if the trainer only had time to look at the collective marks, they could say, aha, this was the highlight, or this needs a bit of work. I think maybe we should focus our training in this spot. So the first one we have is gates, and gates have in the past always been times two, but it's now only times one, and because we'd like to take a little bit of the emphasis off of the expensive trot and the horse that costs $40,000 without ever being ridden, and think a little bit more about the quality of the training and the quality of the riding. So the gates would be a summary of the natural God-given walk, trot, and canter of the horse. And then at first level and above, because we have lengthenings and mediums and extensions, if we do see more freedom in the lengthenings, then we as judges can use that to go up a bit on the gait scores. We don't ever use the lack of a lengthening or a medium for a reason to go down in the gait scores. The three gaits basically are equal, so you would give a score for each of the three gaits and divide by three. A poor walk can really lower the gait score, especially if it's in the medium walk and the free walk, or in the collect walk and the extended walk. There's always been a bit of a disagreement with the judges and the discussion about where does collected walk fit. Should it be in the training and therefore go in the submission? But I think now everyone's come around to saying, no, the collected walk needs to be reflected in the gait score. So it is very important that the walk is regular and pure. If you have a horse with a fabulous trot and a fabulous canter and a very poor walk, it definitely will bring that gait score down. So try to find a horse with a super canter and a good, clear, rhythmic walk, and the trot is always the gait that can be improved the most through training. So then moving on, we go to impulsion. And impulsion really talks about the horse's hind legs in the back. How's the engine? How does he use the hind leg? Does he have a desire to go forward? And is he supple in the back? That suppleness will create elasticity. And the more elastic horse, of course, gets a higher score here than one that's a little bit more earthbound and the hind legs are a little bit straight and lacking reach and power. I kind of like to think about for the impulsion score is, can the horse do the test? Because it also talks about engagement, and we talk about the horse, can the horse do the test? When we get to the collected movements, the horse has to have enough balance to be able to perform those movements with ease. So if the horse is struggling a bit through the collected movements, you're probably going to have a lower engagement score as well. So let's call engagement, can the horse do the test? And of course, we don't want to see the rider kicking and using the whip all the time. That a little bit tells us the horse isn't really wanting to go forward. It doesn't show a desire to go forward. And then the third collective mark is submission. And let's say submission is, will the horse do the test? So can he and will he? And the submission talks more about the neck and the mouth and the contact, the ability of the horse to bend and be laterally supple both directions. And so if we have some movements that are missing, let's say the horse fails in both lines of tempi changes, or the horse really doesn't show us that it ever bends left, those are things that will show up here in the summary in the submission score. Now, if the horse makes one little mistake in the top of the test or spooks once, the judge isn't going to bring that down into submission. To lower the submission score, the problem has to be pervasive. It has to show up more than one time. And then the last score in the FEI test is just the rider. It's only one score, and it talks about the rider's position and the rider's ability to influence the horse in the proper way. In the USEF test, we have two scores. The first one would be for how the rider looks. So if you had a position design flaw, let's say you lean back or you lean forward, or you don't have those straight lines, shoulder, hip, heel, or elbow, hand of the horse's mouth, or you're very crooked, you sit off to the left all the time, that score is going to be lowered by the judge. The final score is the score about how well you influence a horse. Do you use the corners? Do you ride accurate figures? Are your transitions prepared, the downwards ones especially, or are they abrupt, and do you surprise the horse with your aids? So if the horse is having a problem performing the movements of the test, sometimes we think the horse could do it, but the rider is getting in the way. So in that case, the lowest score is going to be in this place, the influence of the rider. If the horse is having a bad day and just being very naughty and spooky and resistant, then probably the lowest score is going to be in the submission. If you have a horse that seems to the judge to be very willing to be able to do the test, but maybe just doesn't have quite enough balance or enough engagement to stay in collection, then very possibly the impulsion score will be the lowest score. So I think when you get your test, if you look at those scores first and look at the comments, the judge will often circle the directive ideas, let's say an impulsion where it says desire to move forward. I oftentimes circle not today or needs more enthusiasm, or sometimes I go yes, exclamation, exclamation. So those little words and the comments made by the judge will give you some helpful hints on what you need to improve on and what you need to work on for your future performances. The final comments are a little bit, two or three sentences where the judge would like to give you some positive reinforcement and say, wow, you did a great job using your corners, or you ride very accurate figures, and then they'll have a second comment which says, but today I brought your scores down a bit because I would like to see more bending left and right, or I would like to see a more even contact or a longer neck, or the pole gets a little bit too low, or the horse comes behind a vertical too often. So there you should be able to see a summary of these things are the highlights, and here's a little bit where you need to do some more homework. Does that sound helpful to everyone out there?
I think that's great, Janet. And the comments, of course, are always where the riders look to see where they can improve. And they are meant to be constructive, aren't they, from the judges, to help you prepare for your next test?
Yes. And, you know, oftentimes as a judge, we're there to see the horse for 6 minutes and justify our scores. So if I give you a 7 and say, I would like to have more brilliance or more risk, then you with your trainer have to say, well, you know, last week my horse was really naughty and he wouldn't stay in the arena, so I'm really happy that I had all these 7s, and I am a little nervous about trying to have more risk or more brilliance because I'm afraid he's going to blow up. Well, that's your decision, and that's where you have to be a smart rider and say, maybe in a couple of weeks we'll try that, but right now I'm happy with my 7s, and so I'm going to stay there. So this discussion has to happen between the judge giving the comments and reflecting on why your marks were not a 10, And then you need to discuss that with your trainer, or if you are the trainer, think about that and know your horse and be willing to work with where your horse is at the time and say, okay, well, I know I could pick up a few extra points here or there, but I think I'll be still a little bit careful in those lengthenings or those extensions. And there at the end of the day, the judge is always happy to see you come back and notice that you actually have read the test and are improving on a few things and working hard to try to make things better. So I think we have to keep in mind that the horse, the judge, the rider, the trainer, that we're all one team and we're all on the same team and we're there working to improve the quality of the training and the quality of the performance and not look at it as an adversarial relationship.
And in total, how much percentage do the collective marks contribute towards the overall score, Janet?
Well, I think in most of the tests, you know, mathematically, I really don't know the percentage of what the collectives are. I think it would probably vary because training level doesn't have as many marks as Grand Prix. But what it should reflect is if in the top part of your test you had all sevens, let's say you would have 70%, then the collectives should be 70 to 73%. If you have a 65% on the top, then the collectives should be a 65 to a 68. In other words, they should reflect each other. You shouldn't have a test on top of 65 and then have collectives that are only 62%. That's not correct.
So a lot of things for a rider to consider and to take away from those collective marks with each test, because of course they will all be different, but a lot to focus on then when you go back to the training ring.
Yes, you know, though, it's always, I have to say, most of the comments are usually about the training and the contact and the bending and the suppleness. And then the second comment is usually about the balance or the engagement. So I think being a little bit conservative with the impulsion, we always say, the more impulsion you have, the more submission you need. So, you know, you have to make sure you have that balance, that you don't run around like an auction rider with the horse stiff and resistant with the short neck, because that's not appreciated in the dressage ring either. So it's finding that fine line and that harmony between the impulsion and the submission that we're looking for.
Do you want to just speak to the rider's position and seat and then harmony?
Well, the harmony score is no longer there. It's no longer a separate score. There's only two rider scores. One talks about how the rider looks. Do they have a classical position? Do they have that nice straight line from shoulder, hip, heel with the knee bending and the lower leg and the heel underneath the body to help balance the rider? Too many riders think, oh, I'm riding dressage, and they ride with too long of a stirrup, and they don't have any bend in their knee, and then they don't really have the ability to have the support there of their leg to help their balance. So I think we have to be careful that your stirrups aren't too long. It used to be they were always too short. Now I think we've gone the other direction, and some of the riders have their stirrups too long. Then we need to talk about a good seat, a nice supple seat that follows the movement of the horse, and a seat that's balanced and centered, not a rider that hangs always off the left side of the horse to find their balance. And we need to talk about a nice supple contact and a rider with a following arm to be able to be elastic and follow a little bit the movement of the neck and not have a rigid contact that restricts the neck, because that will bring sometimes a submission score and the rider score down. And then the last score talks about the correct influence of the rider. Does the rider use the corners? Does the rider have the correct bend in the corners? If they're doing a turn on the haunches, do they know they're supposed to prepare the horse and have the horse shorten the walk a bit and show the horse bending and positioned in the direction of the turn? We see an awful lot of turns on the haunches that have counter bending. And so that's not the horse's fault. The horse doesn't know they're supposed to bend in the direction of the turn. So that's, again, where the judge would mark that score down a little bit for the rider.
Well, this is very helpful indeed. Janet, thank you so much for coming on the program and explaining it all for us.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it, and I hope everyone found it helpful and that they do read. I just can't say enough. Read your test, read the comments, and, you know, judges, try to be helpful. We work very, very hard on our education and on our comments, and we want to be helpful and we want to be positive, and hopefully the riders will take the time to read the effort that we put into our comments.
And you can find more information about collective marks on the website at usdf.org. And now for part two of an extract taken from the judges' meeting at the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
The sport horse score sheets have also changed for 2015, and the most drastic changes come in the sport horse prospect score sheet and the breeding stock score sheet. Previously, the confirmation was all in one score for the entire horse, and now we've split it into four categories. And so we feel that this will be much clearer to the owner of the horse as to, or the handler for that instance, how the horse ended up with the confirmation score it did. Because previously, if a horse got a 7, was it because overall the horse is a 7, or was it because it was an 8 horse that has a really bad club foot that they came way down on? And that wasn't as clear before with it just being one number. Whereas now, you might have 8, 8, 8, 4. So those are the major changes that we've made to our score sheets. We are recommending that horse shows, especially at the beginning of this coming season, add a little bit of time per horse for the judge, because the judges are going to have to get used to it. I think once they get used to it, it won't take any more time, to be honest with you. I really don't. But initially, it probably will. So we are recommending that instead of scheduling perhaps 4 minutes per horse, you might schedule 4-5, 4-5, something like that. And we definitely think you want to keep in mind that your scores are going to take a little time to get used to this, and that A, you need to watch very carefully, particularly on this score sheet where it's the 0.75, and that it'll probably take them a little extra time in the beginning too. So in early shows, you may want to have an extra score so that you can keep up. I think once everyone gets used to this, I don't really think it'll take much more time. I've judged Arabian shows, and they don't take any more time. It's the same thing as when these start, everybody's going to go off. We're going to be blowing whistles like crazy for the first 3 months, you know, because everybody has to get used to the new system. The other score sheets have all changed. The only other significant change is on the adult amateur score sheet. The only change we made there was, previously, your presentation and turnout was 20% and your walk presentation was 10%, and we thought it was a little problematic that the nice braids got a better score than the well-presented walk. So we've changed that, and the grooming and turnout is now 10% and the walk is 20%. All of the score sheets, you need to throw away your old ones. The other change score sheets only have some verbiage changes and stuff, but you do need to use the new score sheets. And for the dressage judges in here, start learning how to do materiel class as well, because we're going to be having a materiel championship at all breeder series finals starting in 2016. So there's going to be a lot more people entering materiel coming a year from now, because they will be able to qualify at a regular dressage show for that. Jeannie?
I have a lot of judges ask me why they are judging these classes, and then is there a difference between the materiel and the undersaddle? Because now you're taking away confirmation. Used to be you stripped them.
We did used to do that, and it took a lot of time, and most of the riders are amateurs, and the horses were twirling and spinning, and it was rather frightening, and I was really glad when it went away. I was embarrassed the first show that I went to, and I hadn't paid attention, then it went away, and I made everybody strip down and then had nowhere to write the number. But that was a long time ago. I personally would like to just see materiel. The reason there are the two separate classes is so that if people want more opportunities to take their horse in the ring, they've got more than one class to do it in. And the under saddle class is kind of strange because it's a much more complicated score sheet. You do judge the conformation, but there in the rule book, there is the verbiage that you don't have to use any score sheet. You can just place them. So that's a bit of a dichotomy in my mind, but I'm a black and white engineer type, so there you go. So it's the under saddle class can be two complete extremes, and the materiel sort of meets in the middle. The materiel to me is the important class. The other one's more of another opportunity to get in the ring. Peggy?
Just a clarification, correct if I'm wrong here. Right now the rule is that three-year-olds in materiel are divided fillies in one division, colts and geldings in another division. And then there's the filly four and five-year-olds and the colt and gelding
those would be mares and stallions, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You are not allowed to have the girls and the boys in the same class unless it is a championship class or an IBC class in any breed class. The current rule is that materiel, 4 and 5 year olds, must be held together, and that has been changed to if the show chooses, they can split the class.
And a reminder that the new tests can be found on the website at usdf.org. where you'll also find more resources and educational information at eTrack. That's at usdf.org. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store, so you can listen to the show on the go. Until next week, thanks for your company, and don't forget that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.